Yeah, every morning.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is the 7th of February, and we are here for the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today, we are going to be continuing our subcommittee orientation, and I have to open an information session, which I just did, and I'm going to invite Mr. Bender to come forward and take up where he left off yesterday. Welcome back, Mr. Bender.
Thank you very much, Mr. Co-Chair and subcommittee members. I am Steve Bender with the Legislative Fiscal Office, and what I would like to do today is finish up on the overview of general budget principles and then move more specifically to your particular agency subcommittees and sort of set the stage for what you'll be working on this session and the types of issues very broadly that you'll be looking at. We won't be going into detail. The details will be coming starting tomorrow when you have your first budget public hearing scheduled. Tomorrow you'll be hearing the budget of the Oregon Racing Commission. But yesterday I was going through the orientation document that was stored on yesterday's OLIS meeting, and we've gotten through to slide number 12. What we will be doing today, or what I would like to do today, if you want to follow on your own laptops, is we'll basically be looking at all of the materials from yesterday that we didn't open up or get to, plus there's one additional item at the end that's posted for today's meeting. So unfortunately, they're in two different meeting dates in OLIS, but hopefully that will not be cause problems. Unless there are any particular questions before I get started.
Any questions from the committee?
We'll
speed ahead.
Thank you. When you adjourned yesterday, we were on this slide where we were looking at or talking about the various categories of expenditures. And we'll be coming back to this later. This is going to prove to be somewhat important. But as you can see, we do have major expenditure categories that we use in all state agency budgets. The first two, personal services and services and supplies, are generally, you can generally think of them as the cost of running state government, the cost of the operations and the agencies themselves. Other things, such as special payments. Special payments is actually a very important category, and it includes all payments that an agency makes outside of itself, outside of state government, and transfers of monies. And these monies can go to a variety of entities. They can go to individuals. They can go to other local governments. They can go to companies. They can be in the form of loans. They can be in the form of grants. So it's a very, especially in the subcommittee, you'll see that there are a lot of these special payments in the particular agencies that you are determining the budgets for. But so I'll probably come back to this slide later. But this next slide, number 13, really just talks about budget bills, budget reports, budget notes. These are all important concepts in this committee. But I'm going to take a little liberty, and instead of just looking at the slides, which this will be available to you to look at any time, I want to actually show you a few budget bills and a budget report quickly, just to see what we're talking about here in terms of the work of the subcommittee. Again, ways and means bills and processes are a little different than some other committees. So what I'm showing here, this is from last session. I'm not showing any budget bills that you have this session because we'd have to notice them.
Excuse me just a minute, Mr. Bender. Senators, can you see those all right? And you can see the side screen? Or
you're not possibly making an ageist reference, are you, sir?
Oh, I'm not sure about that.
I was just showing proper deference to the Senate.
Oh, good. We can see them. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate your concerns.
As I mentioned, tomorrow you're going to be having a hearing on the Racing Commission budget.
Mr. Bender, I just need to explain for folks who may be listening, there's a large screen on the right that the House has a good view of. The senators have to look straight back to a smaller screen, so
And we appreciate the chair's concern.
Thank you. Breaks my heart.
That is, I apologize. That type is very difficult to see on the smaller screen. But this was the budget bill 2 years ago for the Racing Commission as it came out of this subcommittee and the full Ways and Means Committee. And the reason I'm showing you this is to point out a few things about the bill itself. First of all, there is a bill. That is to say, every budget requires a law, and the law is in the form of a particular bill. We have typically one agency per bill, though we also have Ways and Means will also work on omnibus bills that include more than one agency, but those are limited in number. Initially, every agency has its own bill. And if you look at this one here, it's only two sections. It's about as simple a bill as you'll ever see on the floor when you're voting this session. The first bill, the first section says, notwithstanding any law limiting expenditures, so there's this term limiting expenditures. Again, here there's a term maximum limit. We refer to this as an expenditure limitation. So you'll hear us talking about an expenditure limitation. The reason this is an expenditure limitation is it's talking about payment of expenses from, and this is the boilerplate language for what we always refer to shorthand, we use the term other funds. The legal way that legislative counsel drafts the term other funds, they do not use that term in statute, is it's fees, monies, or other revenues, including miscellaneous receipts, but excluding lottery funds and federal funds. That's other funds. That's everything, you know, except lottery and federal and general fund. And it's from all of these different sources. So what this Section 1 is actually saying is it's saying that the Racing Commission has somewhere fees, monies, and other revenues that it collects and receives. How does it do that? It does that because there are other statutes in ORS that allow it and indicate exactly what fees, revenues, and other receipts it can receive. This bill doesn't even talk about that. This bill doesn't even talk about how much money the agency can receive. It merely limits the amount of money that the agency can spend from these receipts. So this is an other funds limitation or an other funds expenditure limitation. A few other things to point out that may be unusual or seem unusual is this bill is saying that the Racing Commission can spend up to $6,028,486. And I think the thing that you may be wondering, that may strike you as odd, is that's an exact number. I mean, let's face it, we're talking about an agency's 24 months of expenditures. Why don't we just round it at least a bit? Maybe not to 6 million, but even to like 6,028,000. Why do we have it down to the actual dollar? And the reason why we have it down to the actual dollar is, as you work through the budget, there are a number of calculations that are made that actually come to a specific dollar amount, and the sum of all those is another specific dollar amount, and there is no rounding that is done. So some of the specific things that are having coming to dollar amounts are, how much is it going to cost, or how much are you budgeting to pay the agency employees for salaries and other benefits, fringe benefits? How much is that going to cost? We estimate that down to the dollar because some of these are, even though the salaries may be rounded to, well, salaries on a monthly salary, it doesn't have to be rounded. It could be a certain amount per down to the dollar. Then you have Social Security costs, which is a percentage of that. We round that to the nearest dollar. Things, that is why we have an actual dollar amount here. So it may look like it's being overly precise, but it's based on a calculation that sums up different dollar amounts. The other thing to note is this language here, established for the biennium beginning July 1st, 2015, all of these budget bills are for one biennium only. And what this means is this bill is saying, Oregon Racing Commission, you cannot spend more than $6,028,486 from July 1st, 2015 to June 30th, 2017. Under this law, starting July 1st, 2017, they can spend anything they've got because there's no limit. This limit stops on June 30th. And that's why you're back here to pass a new budget, because if you don't, starting July 1, the agency's expenditures will be unlimited. And that is not presumably what you would like to happen. So that's all there is. Then there's this other section, though. We might as well talk about this one, too. This act is necessary for the immediate preservation of the public peace, health, and safety. And because of that, an emergency is declared to exist, and it takes effect on July 1, 2015. Now, question, well, what's the emergency? What's happening with the Racing Commission that's such an emergency? The answer is this language, which is the emergency clause language. Any bill that has an emergency clause will typically have exactly the same language, regardless of the reason it has the emergency clause. But this emergency clauses are put on all budget bills for the simple reason that you're limiting expenditures from July 1 through June 30th. If this bill doesn't have an emergency clause, it would not have become effective until January 1st, 2016. That's when bills in the 15th session without emergency clauses became effective. And then you would have had a six-month period where there was no limitation, there was no budget for the agency. So you will see emergency clauses on every budget bill because you're determining a budget for the full 24-month period. Some budget bills may not pass, well, not pass, they have to pass and be signed by the governor into law before July 1st, 2017 in this session. Some cases, that's not going to happen. It always, well, it may happen, but typically some of the budgets don't become signed by the governor until we're already in the new biennium. And you'll see, you'll be asked to pass a continuing resolution toward the end of the session that carries over those budgets that haven't been signed just for a few more weeks or another month until the new budget becomes effective. But that's all there is for a simple budget. For a budget bill, for a more complicated budget, I just want to show it to you. I don't want to really go into this. But this is the budget bill for the Oregon Business Development Commission. And you can see as you scroll through, this is much more, precise. Because it indicates a bunch of, there's several limitations in here. The first section shows general fund appropriations. And it shows two separate general fund appropriations for two different things. This is the section two is the other funds, like we saw for the Racing Commission. But you establish separate limitations for different parts of that agency budget. And this goes on and on. One thing to note is when a bill has separate line items such as this, the Constitution does give the governor the authority to either veto the whole bill. Of course, the governor has that authority for all of your bills. But the governor for budget bills has the additional authority, if she or he wants, they can eliminate one item, one particular line item, and the rest of the bill still holds. So for example, this bill, we're looking here at the section, it just turns out these are the lottery funds. If you pass this bill and the governor said, well, I don't want to give the Oregon Film and Video Office anything, she could line the item that out, and they wouldn't get any money, but the rest of the bill would go through. So it's very rare that the governor does line item veto, but it happens. And we see that sometimes.
Sure. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Senator.
Is the governor limited on how many lines that they are able to veto?
No.
So they could
No. And, of course, if they were going to limit all, you know, if they want to veto all the lines, they might as well just, you know, veto the bill as a whole. But, no, they can veto every line except one, if that's what they choose to do.
Chair Conger.
Representative Mink.
Thank you, Chair. Quick question. So if they line item there, if you had an appropriations section, will that be changed by that amount that's drawn up?
This would change the budget of the agency, yes.
Okay.
And we would report, if you were still in session when this occurred, we would certainly let you know that the governor did not approve your budget, and you would still have the option, since you were still in session, to react to that. If this line item veto was made after you had adjourned, which is possible given the timing, then the budget, that funding would just not be available anymore. And if it was of such a nature that the legislature, thought that was critical, they would, they could take actions to go into special session even. Typically, the governor, if the governor has an intent to do this, they often will let people know while they're still in session, so okay. Things can be worked.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
And Representative Bearden.
Thank you, Chair. Can you show us how to drill down and actually see the budget details, or will that be part of the presentation at some point? So if I really wanted to know all about this budget.
Thank you, Representative. That was exactly what I was trying to show here in these budget bills. They really don't say all that much, especially for the Racing Commission. It was just a number. There's no idea in the bill itself how you came about that number, what decisions you made to come to that number. But that's the only thing that's in law. So the only thing that would be against the law for the Racing Commission to do would be to spend more than that amount of money in a biennium. You, though, need to provide more information to the agency. And the mechanism that Ways and Means does that is through what's called the budget report. So for every budget bill, we are going, or you are going to be producing a budget report. And this is something that LFO staff, writes up based on your deliberations. What this budget report does is it serves several functions. The first function is to let your colleagues on the full committee know what decisions you made, to let your colleagues on the floors know what decisions you made, and assuming that it is enacted, the bill passes, to clarify to the agency what decisions you made and what they need to do based on the budget you passed. What a budget, and this is the budget report for the simple agency.
Excuse me, Mr. Bender. Co-Chair Johnson.
No, I'm happy to have Mr. Bender finish.
All right, I'm sorry, please.
Make a comment.
This is the budget report from 2 years ago for that simple agency. This was the Racing Commission. It's hard to find it right here, but once you see more of these, you'll know where to look to see these things. But this was the Racing Commission's budget. Remember, in the bill, it only had one number. But here, we put down some of the details. The first detail to notice that I think I want to point out is this. Well, I'm trying to highlight this. Position summary. The budget report, the bill didn't say anything about how many people the agency can hire. The budget report does. It says here that this budget supports 14 positions. And you can see additional information. It's down one from what it was in the 13-15 biennium. But focusing here, there are 14 positions, and not all of them are full-time. Because that number is less than 14, at least one of the positions, maybe more, is only available for part of the biennium. Either they're full-time positions for maybe 20 months of the whole biennium, or they're part-time positions for the whole amount. But this is where the position limitations are put in the budget report. Then there's some discovery. Discussion of the revenues that we're talking about that we're limiting. Then it continues, and it talks about what the Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee actually decided and what's behind that number. So this gives I'm not going to go through this right now, but this gives the instructions of how that number was arrived at. It also does a few other things here, but this is where this information is given to the agency. There's also, at the bottom here, summary of performance measures. We talked a bit about key performance measures yesterday. Key performance measures are actually adopted by the legislature and included in the budget report. So these are the key performance measures and the targets. You see here, these are how the agency is expected to perform. When the Racing Commission comes before you tomorrow, they are supposed to tell you this. They're supposed to go through their KPMs that you approved or that your predecessors on the subcommittee approved 2 years ago and say, this is KPM 1. You set a target of 1.5 and we did 1.8. You know, we exceeded the target, we were better, we were worse. That's supposed to be part of the standard presentation. At the bottom here, I noted, this might be a little hard to see, I can't get this thing off here, but there was a subcommittee action that said something about KPMs 2 and 3 will be examined based on actual results. And what this means is tomorrow, when the Racing Commission comes up, they should be prepared to tell you how they examined KPM 2 and 3 because you gave them that, or your predecessors gave them that instruction. It's not, you know, we in LFO considered our responsibility to make sure that the agencies respond to these things. So you don't have to feel that if you don't catch this or check the budget report from 2 years ago, that the issue is going to be dropped. We monitor. That's one of the things we do for you, is to ensure that your budget instructions are being adhered to. The budget report for the OBDD budget, as you can imagine, is longer. It goes into more detail. There's no, you know, because there are all these different line items, it discusses what these line items are. I have highlighted a couple things here, though, just to show some of the detail that you get in the, that you would put in a budget report. OBDD, as you'll see, has numerous programs. Here, for example, we indicate, this is nowhere in the bill, you can't find it, but exactly what the support was for the six Oregon Inc. Initiatives. Then we go and we indicate what the support was for each of those six that totals up to this number of $17,900,000. Some other important types of information we'll put in a budget note. If you look at the second highlighted area, this is talking about a particular package that was approved, and it says it provides so many lottery funds and establishes one full-time permanent, it explains the establishment of a position. If you're funding a new position, it indicates what type of position it is and why you're giving them that much money. And let me see, I'm going to flip ahead and then come back. Here's something that's important. Here you provided money for Regional Solutions, a program called the Regional Accelerator and Innovation Network. You provided $1 million, and we noted here that the funding was provided on a one-time basis and will be phased out in the development of the department's 2017-19 biennium current service level budget. So when you make a decision to provide things one time, we put that in there, and then we'll check when the agency comes with its current service level, we'll make sure that they're not putting that money in there again because you indicated that that wasn't your intent. And then flipping back, I want to go back and talk about budget notes. There's a budget note here, and when I went through the subcommittee rules yesterday, one of the rules was about budget notes and how they have to reflect or be related to something in the budget, and they can't be in lieu of legislation. So here was a particular budget note that was passed, which provides a really good example of what we're talking about. This budget note was okay. That's why it's in the budget report. So why is it okay? What this budget note refers to is a funding that was, an association called the Oregon Metals Initiative that is an association of private industry and some universities, that work together to promote innovation in Oregon's metal industries. So there's research and development to improve the processes in Oregon's metal industries. Last session, there was a significant increase in the funding provided to that entity. And there was a budget note that was passed. The first thing to know about a budget note is the rest of this budget report, you won't even see it until you're done with your work session on the budget, on the bill. It's not that we're trying to keep it from you, but we need to get all of your decisions before we can write it. The draft language will be available before the full committee votes on the budget that comes out of the subcommittee. The one exception to that are budget notes. Budget note language is actually voted on. A motion is taken to approve a budget note language, and we only put it in if the subcommittee votes for it. So the budget note language you've seen already. And the reason we do this is as follows. When the subcommittee votes on a budget note, it's very clear that that's exactly what everyone meant. They saw it and they voted on it. The rest of this language is descriptive and it's valid, but you as a legislator have every right, if someone comes to you and says, why did you increase this by this much or whatever, you could say, well, I didn't see that language. You know, when I voted on it, it wasn't available. The budget note language, though, no one can, you know, it's very obvious and clear that the legislature approved it. In this case, let's see what the budget note says. It says the subcommittee finds that the Oregon Metals Initiative contributes to the advancement of Oregon's innovation and entrepreneurship economy. The subcommittee understands that the initiative will add the director of the Oregon Business Development Department or the director's designee to the board as an ex officio member to continue the successes. So what this is saying is, this is saying that the expectation is, listen, we've given you a lot more money now. We want to know that the board, the director of the Business Development Department is sitting on your board as you make decisions to ensure that this additional funds are being used responsibly. So it is something that's directly related to the budget. It's a direction that has been made. And like all budget notes, when Business Oregon comes before you later this session in their phase one budget hearings, they are going to go through and they're going to explain this budget note. They're going to say, you gave us this budget, this is what happened. Presumably they won't only say, yes, he's on the board now. They'll probably say, hopefully they'll say a little bit more, we've participated and it's been working well for us or whatever. But this is a very appropriate budget note. And could this have been done by legislation? Of course, you could have legislated this, but you probably wouldn't have wanted to because the Oregon's Metals Initiative is a private consortium. It's not something that's established in statute, and the legislature doesn't usually pass bills telling private associations, you know, who they want on their board, but this was a budget decision. So it's on here. The only thing to note is budget notes are only enforced for the biennium. What this means is that if the Oregon Metals Initiative kicks the OBDD director off the board on July 1st, they technically aren't in violation of the budget note. Whether they'll do that, you know, I have no reason to believe they'd do that, but that's the way the budget notes work.
So, Co-Chair Johnson.
Mr. Bender has given you a very accurate and very legal and very professional description of both budget notes and how some of these things come into the budget. Maybe if I could add a little anecdotal. Budget notes are very complicated, and there is a hierarchy in this process. You don't get to just go out and write a budget note. This is a very hierarchical organization, and at the top of our food chain is leadership, and then are the co-chairs, and then are Gomberg and Johnson, and then is the committee. And these budget notes occasionally try to create in a budget document policy that either has not made it through the legislature or could not make it through the legislature. There is a tendency, in my observation, for people to grossly overstep on budget notes and not just proclaim the intent of the legislature, but actually try to create policy in the budget notes. you don't get to just write one and it magically appears in the budget. There's a hierarchy of how they're signed off. So let's assume that one of you wanted a budget note to limit the power of the real estate commissioner. First of all, that question is probably a policy question and wouldn't be appropriate subject matter for a budget note. Secondly, you'd have to find consensus with Gomberg and Johnson. Then we have to shop this concept to Nathanson and Devlin, and then they have to. So I don't want to leave the impression that budget notes are common or easy or readily accomplishable. And the second thing is to just, as Mr. Bender had showed the specific appropriations in the budget report for OBDD, you will have a chance to opine on all of those. We vote on them. We discuss them in the committee. But there also is a certain hierarchy to those. And so last word in Ways and Means world is the co-chairs, and the last word are the presiding officers. And so, again, just understand that the committee can give a very clear articulation of where we are, but there's the possibility that if somewhere out there in the veiled shrouds of whatever, there's a different opinion, we'll hear about it, and we may not be dispositive.
Thank you, Senator. Yes, Representative.
Thank you. This is really helpful, but it talks about everything for this biennium that we're doing, and what I was trying to ask, but I didn't do a very good job, was if we want to look at history of the budgeting, where do we do that? Because I, a former school board guy, when we started looking at trends over a 10-year period, that was often very enlightening. Is there a way to do that?
Representative, we have various documents that may help and for a somewhat shorter term, that are easily help for a somewhat shorter term historical view. If you're looking for history, a longer-term history of the agency itself or of a particular agency's budget, please contact the LFO budget analyst assigned to that agency, and we will get that information to you. But we do have a document on our webpage that we produce after each legislative session that carries forward or carries back the funding for two prior biennia. Okay. That is our detailed analysis document. And if you and your staff want to go back, for example, further back, you can go back to an earlier one of those detailed analyses, or you can certainly contact us and we'll get that information to you on one page sort of thing.
Thank you. I won't be doing it often.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bender. Please continue.
Okay. Are there any more questions about budget reports? Okay. I'm just going to, nope, that's the wrong one. Sorry. This one. Yeah, I think we've sort of touched this one. This one, I think we can get back to. Here's more talk about budget reports and budget notes, federal grants. We talked about, I think just the thing to point out here is that, again, we'll be scheduling various items in the subcommittee during the session. In some cases, there will be reports that are scheduled. In some cases, you will formally acknowledge receipt of the report or not, depending upon whether the report was expected by some type of previous legislative action. But these reports, of course, you don't just listen to them. These are your opportunity to let the reporter know whether the report is satisfactory in your point of view or whether additional work needs to be done. Policy bills, these will typically not come to you until later. But you can expect, especially in the last month or so of legislative session, to be working on a number of policy bills that have come to the Joint Ways and Means Committee from other policy committees.
But, Mr. Bender, in the interest of clarity, these are policy bills with fiscal ramifications. The intent here is not to make Ways and Means a super committee that gets to give thumbs up and thumbs down on policy bills, But if a bill comes out of a policy committee with a $20 bazillion price tag on it, that is certainly germane to the architecture of the entire budget, and it could come to a committee to say whether or not that was within the budget framework to be able to afford it.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair, for mentioning that. I should have said that.
Mr. Bender, let's pursue that just a little bit deeper for the benefit of any new committee members. We have a policy bill that's got a clear fiscal impact, and let's say it's a bill that originates in the House. And that bill is then passed out by a policy committee in the House. What happens next?
What happens next is actually determined by the Speaker of the House, who can either refer the bill with a add a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on the House side, or allow the bill to go to the House floor. Our main concern in Ways and Means is to work on the bill before it becomes law. And usually, we ask, and usually the process is, to have it come to Ways and Means after the first policy, or the policy committee on the introducing House side. So in most cases, the bill will come from the policy committee to Ways and Means. Sometimes the Speaker's office may contact us prior when they're assigning the bill and asking us if they think we're going to need it, so we'll look it over. In some cases, we're not sure about it's amended or something happens, and we ask that it be sent here. The bill will then become, will be referred to Ways and Means. The co-chairs of Ways and Means will review it, ask us, LFO, for our initial determination, if we have any idea how much it's going to cost. Sometimes we don't know. Sometimes we have a pretty good idea. And then as these bills, as I receive all of these, and they try to determine what's possible and what's doable, and ask you also for your input. Some of these bills relating to these particular agencies under your purview, they will then assign them to the subcommittee, and in some cases they assign them for public hearing only just to get your input. In some cases it's public hearing and work session if you want to recommend the bill to move forward.
And that is to say that if it then comes out of the subcommittee back to the full Ways and Means, that measure could either be incorporated into an end-of-session reconciliation measure or could go to both floors of the House for final adoption, not having been heard in the second House in a policy committee.
Yes. Typically, it would be the latter, latter case, yes.
Please.
With your indulgence, I'd like to talk a little bit about the budget situation now, which we haven't really gotten to yet. But just to give you some basic idea of how the budget is constructed, the entire budget of the state in the current biennium, this is not the biennium that you're going to be working on, is almost $72 billion. And we've separated out here into the four major fund types. The general fund and lottery fund combined is about $19 billion in the current biennium. And this is the area of the budget that the co-chairs work on and in their budget frameworks, because these are the funds that can be distributed to various state agencies to meet programmatic needs, whereas the federal funds and the other funds are typically designated for particular programs and aren't easily moved to something else. As the legislature, you do have authority in some cases to take other funds that were originally collected for one purpose and transfer them to a different purpose. Sometimes the legislature takes this action, feeling that the fiscal needs are necessary. In other cases, legislature will not take this action, feeling that these funds are not appropriately used for another purpose. But this is something that you can do, and this is something that, if it is done, will be done in a program change bill. You can't do it in these agency appropriation bills because the Constitution does not allow that. But in a separate bill, the program change bill, you can actually designate funds, it's the best way of putting it, funds that were collected for one agency purpose and use. You can change that, and that is a authority you can do and has been done on one-time basis in the past to help balance the budget.
Mr. Bender, before you leave that slide.
Of course.
Let's talk for a moment about federal funds.
Mm-hmm.
And let's presume for a moment that we are entering into a uniquely uncertain period of time about how those funds may unfold in the coming months. Talk to me for a minute about how that may affect our overall budgeting situation and what the reaction is down the hall in LFO to what I've described as a potentially unique and uncertain situation.
Well, it's a concern in LFO as well. We know that there are potentially major changes that may come down from the federal government in terms of federal funding for various programs. We are trying to get as much information as we can, but in many cases, answers just are not yet available. We'll continue to do that, but it may be the case that in some cases we don't know exactly what the impacts of federal funding changes are until after your session is over, and may need to make adjustments in the upcoming session. Personally, I have not been working on this too much, given my agency assignments. I know especially that the Human Services Subcommittee has this as a concern, and in that area, our analysts in the office are working to get as much information as possible for the Assembly to help you with your budget.
All right. Thank you for that. Please, next slide.
Here the budget is divided differently into program areas, and I'd just like to point out that of the $72 billion in the budget, all funds, the economic development budget, which you'll be looking at, was about $4.4 billion. You also have transportation, which is here in this all other, so it doesn't really show out separately. But these are the areas of the budget, and you can see how they've been divided out into various sectors. Of course, the biggest individual sectors are human services and education. But if we move instead to just the general and lottery funds portion, which is the focus of the co-chair's budget framework, we can see that the proportions are somewhat different. Here, education is even a larger component of the total general fund and lottery funds budget. Human services is the second biggest, and public safety judicial is the third biggest. So the agencies that you have under your purview don't have the preponderance of general fund and lottery fund, but we'll see that the co-chairs do have specific requests or targets that they've established for the subcommittee to work within. This is just a history of budget growth since 1977-79. The yellow is the general fund, and the orange is the lottery funds. And you can see there's generally been growth in budgets. During the recession period, though, expenditures did decline. So it is not a situation that the expenditures are always higher than they were in the past. But the rate of growth, which is difficult, unfortunately, to see in this particular chart, is probably more variable than even this trend makes obvious when you look at this. Here is the same information as before, but just looking at the general fund and the lottery fund. Here you can see another biennium where the actual total of these two fund sources went down between the 99-01 and 01-03 biennia. But as you can see, I've kind of inferred this before, that after a recession, when there's a shortage of funds, there tends to be a very quick recovery in terms of percentage growth. And as time goes on, that percentage growth slows down a bit as the economic cycle matures. And that's where we are now. That's why we have a somewhat slower rate of general fund growth forecast than is typical. Here we have some expenditures by category. I'm going to get back to this, and I think information that's more useful to you by looking at the particular budgets that you have. But you can see that clearly special payments are the big ones here in the budget. And here we have some of the key drivers of budget change. Population growth tends to increase budgetary needs. Demographic changes can affect how different demand for different programs. There's inflation, which increases costs. Healthcare costs are looked at separately. There's a special category in the budget for mandated caseloads, which is a case where there is an entitlement to serve certain individuals in certain programs. And in those cases, we make adjustments in the budget for that. I believe the only mandated caseload that you have in your budgets are in the unemployment insurance area. Other large mandated caseloads are, though, for state school fund and many of the healthcare programs. So many of these large programs have, if the caseload's increasing, we have to adjust the budget for that. For your agencies, there aren't too many things that are so mandated in law. Federal policy changes, we were talking a bit about that. The co-chair asked about that specifically. Impacts of lawsuits, the PERS litigation, for example. There are ballot initiatives. Roll-up costs. I know that Senator Monroe mentioned that yesterday, that in some cases programs are only funded part of one biennium, then the next biennium there are 24 months of costs. And these are all things that have driven the budget or continue to drive the budget. Some of the issues that you'll be facing are rebalancing. First of all, rebalancing the current biennium budget. There are some budgets that are out of balance that need shifts in funds or additional funds for programs. You'll be seeing that the revenue forecast will change. There'll be a new revenue forecast issued in February 22nd, I think it is. So that's really coming up pretty soon. Then there'll be a second revenue forecast issued during this session in May. I think it's May 16th. And that is the revenue forecast upon which your final budget will be made. So that can still go up or down from what we currently think the general fund revenues will be. We have potential difficulty continuing current general fund programs and services. The governor and other stakeholders are coming forward to you with budget proposals. There's issues out there, uncertainty. We have compensation questions, how you want to fund state employee compensation in the next biennium. We have to respond to the initiatives that voters approved this past fall. And we need to look at beyond just the 2017-19. You want to look at a more longer-term situation to see the impact of your budget decisions.
Co-Chair Johnson.
One of the things, and I'm especially speaking to our newer colleagues now, that you're going to very quickly discover is how popular you are with all of the various interest groups that want money. And I think turning to seasoned ways and means folks and looking for them to correct me if I'm wrong, there will be a temptation as the parade forms outside your door and they all come in explaining that their particular program or their particular constituencies are the sine qua non. There will be a temptation to try to pin you down as budget writers to either go, no-go decisions on their money. This is going to be a very difficult budget cycle because unlike previous budget cycles where we could take money from one pot of money and shore up another one, we are getting so structurally out of whack in some areas that that's not going to be possible. And so just as a friendly admonition to colleagues, I would resist the temptation to make commitments as the steady parade of folks on what day number five appear at your door asking for the sun, the moon, and the stars, because at the end of the day, you will not be able to deliver the sun, the moon, and the stars. And the prophylactic a prophylactic of early ambiguity may serve you well.
Well said.
Senator, you'd like to add to that?
I would. But for the new guys, please. What I have found to be really helpful is I just refer them to the chairs.
Okay. Yeah, and that thumping noise you hear is the bus driving over the chairs, because Gomberg and I will quickly refer them up to the big co-chairs.
I normally send them just over to the Senate, but...
But in all seriousness, it's probably already started for you all, and the inability for us to fund all of the need will become more apparent, I think, as we get deeper into the session.
Well, if I could just comment on that as well. You're certainly going to be seeing from a lot of the agency directors for those budgets that we're going to be hearing here. And I think that's a good opportunity to delve into questions that we may not have time for in a lot of depth here at the committee level. Yeah. You can ask those questions at that time. You can ask them to come back to you with more information, or you can put them on notice that you plan to ask again on the record. Those are opportunities that are available to you in those meeting processes that that again provide more time for more detail than we may have here, because we're going to get going and we're going to have to keep moving things along. And in that light, I'll turn back to Mr. Bender to move things along.
I just have a few more things I'd like to talk about and then get a very brief overview of your agency budgets that you'll be working on. We talk a lot about the current service level. Again, the concept of the current service level is how much do we expect it to cost to maintain the programs that the legislature approved last session through the upcoming budget period, two-year period. And the budget, there are a number of standard adjustments that are included. We start with the budget that you approved 2 years ago, and we make personal service adjustments. These are basically, again, phasing in the any COLAs, cost of living increases, that the employees received during the period. Other cost changes, for example, the PERS rate, changes for the cost of fringe benefits, which are primarily the health insurance premiums. There are also debt service adjustments. Debt service adjustments in the current service level refer to the additional, usually adding, but some cases reduced debt service resulting from bonds that have already been approved. So we're not talking about new bonds that you may be considering this session, but the bonds that were already approved in 2015 and 16 sessions. These debt service adjustments make the adjustments necessary to make sure that those bonds are paid, the debt service on those are paid. There is also a very important, the phase-in costs for programs that did not operate for the entire biennium. So if something was only operating for 6 months and now you have to operate it for 24 months, there's a phase-in cost that's going to cost four times as much with other adjustments occasionally. Program phase-outs. This was that situation. I gave it a specific example for the funding that was provided in the OBDD budget for the RAIN program. Those are taken out. So those are not included in the current service level. Inflation. Inflation does not apply. There's no inflation provided for the personal services adjustments, which are separate, but for the things that the state is paying for and the special payments that the state is making, typically, the inflation is calculated to be 3.7%. If you want to know the basis behind that calculation, it's the forecast of the GDP price deflator increase between next biennium and the current biennium. That's a four-year period. It's projected to increase 3.7%. 4.1%, a higher rate, is allowed for medical costs. So if agencies are paying for medical expenses, either directly or through a payment to someone else for medical expenses, there's a 4.1% inflation built in. And there are exceptions. Agencies can request an exception to this 3.7% rate if they believe they have a good cause. And in some cases, those will get into the CSL, and we'll let you know if they're there. Mandated caseload increases or decreases. These, you don't have too many of them here in the subcommittee, but for other programs, As the number of students, for example, changes, the funding, the CSL for the state school fund changes. You don't need a policy option package just to deal with enrollment growth or enrollment decline. That's already put in there. Fund shifts, you know, if the one-time funding was received, there's some cases, you know, especially for the state's Medicaid program where some federal funds were received and those are no longer available. These kind of adjustments will be put into the current service level budget as well. How does this all come down? Well, this I know, I'm sorry, it's probably pretty hard to see, especially on the back screen. So I'll try to summarize this by saying that the pie chart shows why the current service level numbers are higher than the expenditures were during the 15-17 biennium. That is, why are we saying that it's going to cost more just to keep doing what we've been doing, which is what we're saying. First of all, before I get to the rationale, you can see that the increase is almost $3 billion in cost. And this is general fund, lottery fund only. This isn't the whole budget. So this is the part that the co-chairs have been focusing on in their framework. The costs are up $3 billion. That's equivalent to 15.6%. And you may recall yesterday we said the key figure for revenues was 6.2%. So revenues are up 6.2%. The current service level costs are up 15.6%. When you translate those percentages into the dollars and stuff, you now have a $1.8 billion shortfall in revenues compared to what the current service level expenditures are for general fund and lottery fund. So that is the shortfall that we mentioned. The reason why that's the shortfall, this, again, we're not looking at the revenue growth at all, but as we look at this chart, we're seeing why our expense is growing 15.6%. And we can segregate it out into various factors that are used in the current service level calculation itself. So this first one, this blue pie, position adjustments state 7%. That includes all of the costs increase for paying state employees at the current service level, both salary and benefits. So, for example, you may know that the PERS rate is going up. That is included in this blue pie, or this blue slice of the pie, that there were salary increases that were awarded in 15-17. Now they're going to be paid for the full 24 months. Those are included here. So those things are included in the 7%. The next slice over is debt service. There were additional bonds that were approved in 17-19, and the debt service is going to be higher this biennium than it was last biennium. That debt service is accounting for 6% growth, almost as much as all of the increase in costs for, you know, compensation for state employees. Phase-ins, net phase-ins. These are the programs that are now going to be funded for 24 months that were only funded for 6 months or even 23 months last biennium. Even if it's only, you know, one extra month, we calculate these phase-in costs. This part, please note that this part is only the goods and, you know, the special payments and the services and supplies. If we're hiring people, and now we're hiring for 24 months instead of 12 months, that's already been included in this blue slice already, because that's everything for the employees, including the fact that they're working longer this biennium than last biennium. This says net phase-ins, the green, going back to the green slice, it says net, because there are also phase-outs. The what, you know, the $1 million for rain was a negative, so it's the difference. Oops, what did I do here? Then there's the inflation. This was the 3.7%, 4.1%. But this includes, for example, for state school funds, you know, the inflation that's applied for costs. What's included in here, let me let me try this again. I'm not saying this very well. What's included for here is when the state contracts, or not necessarily contracts, but is paying other people to provide services. So public education is provided by school districts and ESDs. It's not the state government. But there's an inflation factor here to include the fact that the salaries of employees of public schools and ESDs are also going up. It's not only state salaries, state employee salaries that are going up. So that becomes technically included in this category called inflation, and that's why it's so large. It's not just the goods and services, but all of these various services that we basically purchase from other providers. Those providers are generally other governments, but in some cases even nonprofits might be providing these things. Then there's caseload growth. This is cases where there's mandated caseloads. And then finally, replacing one-time funds is a pretty large slice as well. These are funds that we had other funds available last biennium to provide services, and now we need the general fund or lottery fund, or they're not going to be continuing. And finally, ballot measures. There were a number of ballot measures. There were three ballot measures that voters approved, all of which designated particular or new uses for general fund and lottery fund. Those were the, I think, I always call it the continuing education, technical CTE, but I think it's broader than that, ballot measure. There was the ballot measure that there's the veterans ballot measure.
Outdoor schools.
And the outdoor schools. Yeah. So those are those. Altogether, when we make those adjustments, we see a 15%, over 15% increase. And here are some, here's something.
Can I ask?
Oh, please, let me go back.
Representative Reardon.
I'm sorry. Could you elaborate a little bit on the replace one-time funds? That just isn't sinking in for me. Sounds like somebody was talking about this is going to be one time, but magically it's going to be continued forever. Is that really what's happening? I
believe that, again, these are in areas that aren't in my, generally not in the areas of the budget I personally am assigned to work on, but it is not necessarily the case that it wasn't known at the time that funds were being received on a limited duration basis, and that to maintain the programs, the state would need to replace those funds with general fund and lottery funds. But these are programs that are supported by a combination of general fund, lottery funds, and something else, where the something else is no longer going to be available. And in order to maintain levels of that program at the same levels of service, it would require additional general fund or lottery funds to maintain them.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Monroe.
Let me try to help a little bit. Classic example is if you receive a federal grant for something, and it's a one-time federal grant, but it starts up a program that then you need to, if you want to continue it, you have to put in the next biennium general fund money or lottery fund money if you want to continue that program, that the federal grant only funds it for one period of time, and after that you're on your own. That's why this body, the Ways and Means Committee, often looks with jaundiced eyes skeptically at the gift horse, because sometimes the gift horse of this lavish federal grant really condemns us to either cutting that program when the grant runs out, which is a difficult thing to do, or funding it with something else. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Dearman.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Bender, I think that most of this in this biennium is the Medicaid money that's being ramped down by the federal government. That's why that slice is so large. Is that not true?
I do believe that's the case, but I need to confirm that for you.
That would be an example of that kind of thing.
And Senator Hans.
Well, that was kind of my question, too. Where would the health care costs fall into this pie chart?
Let me, if I may, Senator and co-chairs, provide you with a written answer to that that I'll distribute. I don't have all the details behind this area. I was just trying to show the major categories, but I can get you that detail. So let me...
Is 20% or almost 20% a typical amount for that if you went back and looked over other bienniums? Is that because that just seems like a lot.
Again, I have not checked. I think this is higher than usual, but...
Thank you.
Other questions?
All right.
What this chart shows is it shows the growth from the current biennium here to the CSL plus the ballot measures. So this is the growth that was about $3 billion that was shown in the earlier chart. This shows what the governor did. In her budget, she includes the general fund forecast, plus she included some other funds used to replace general fund and had some reduction in expenditures as a result of that. The co-chairs did not include in their budget framework all of the revenues that the governor had included. They did not feel that all of these were appropriate or likely to be, you know, they didn't want to budget on them. They didn't know if the legislature would approve these additional revenues. So the co-chair's budget framework actually does spend less money than is in the governor's budget. And again, the primary reason is that there were a number of revenues that the governor included in her budget that the co-chairs did not include in theirs. I just, in the next 10 minutes, or less maybe, I would just like to talk a little bit about the budgets that you actually are going to be working on, the specific budgets that you're going to be working on in your subcommittee. And there are 12 of them. And what I've done here is I've ordered them by size. So if you look at the total funds numbers, these are all ranked in size order. The largest budget is the first one, Department of Transportation, which this is the current biennium, has a budget of over $3.7 billion. The smallest budget is the Racing Commission. This is the one that you'll be hearing tomorrow. It has a budget of $6 million. If you do the math, which I did, the largest budget is almost 600 times as big as the smallest budget. So you have a great variety of budget sizes here.
But
Senator?
But the important thing to know in just looking at the Department of Transportation is the amount of general fund in that budget is de minimis. And so we have very little impact on a huge budget by virtue of how prescriptive most of their funding is, either by the feds or by our Constitution or other restraints on our ability to romp through a billion-dollar budget. So you'll be very disappointed to find out what a teeny-weeny little bit of ODOT we actually deal with.
And Representative Reardon, just for clarity, it's really hard to read that. So we're just doing the left two columns? That's only part that we own? Or
if I may clarify, Representative, you are doing all of the columns.
Okay.
And indeed, some of these agencies don't have anything in the first two columns. This next chart, actually, I've re-ranked them by the sum of general fund and lottery fund. The agencies that are shown in green are all of the agencies that have some general fund or lottery fund or both. And the agencies at the bottom, unshaded, are all other funds and federal funds. If we start with the ones in the bottom, you'll be, you know, looking at these agency budgets as well and determining what their how they're performing programmatically, whether they're performing up to your expectations, and whether they have a sufficient budget to perform up to your expectations. The difference is that in the co-chair's budget framework, they were looking at distributing general fund and lottery funds in order to obtain a balanced budget across the entire state budget. They haven't specifically addressed or looked at the other agencies. That does not mean that they will not have any, interest in these agencies or plans in order to ensure that the budget accomplishes certain things, but the co-chair's budget framework hasn't addressed anything about these five agencies. It hasn't looked at them. For the other agencies, though, they all have some general fund or lottery fund. This number in the lower right shows that all of your budgets together, total expenditures, are almost $8.9 billion. The general fund and lottery fund portion, the sum of these two numbers, is about $334 million. So it's the general fund, lottery fund portion. The $334 million is the part that the co-chairs have said, we need you to look at this and we need you to cut it. The rest of it, they haven't said that. Now, as you look at these ones here, you can see that co-chair Johnson, Senator Johnson, talked about how little there is in the Department of Transportation budget that's in general fund or lottery fund. It looks like, well, maybe there is a lot here, but most of this is debt service, almost all of it. 90% of it is debt service. And you can't cut debt service because that's for bonds that have already been issued. The only way you can reduce debt service is if the Treasury can reissue the bonds at a lower interest rate. Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. They might not be able to do that anymore. It seems like interest rates are going up, not down. So really, even though this looks like it's $130 million or whatever in combined, 90% of that is untouchable. It's only that remaining part that can be adjusted. But you can see here we have these ranked in order. And just to talk a little bit more about some of these budgets, what I'm trying to show here is how different these budgets are. You're dealing with agencies that have budgets that are really very dissimilar from each other. And that may not become clear in the actual budget presentations because they don't focus on how we're different from other people. But if you look at this, this is personal services. This is actually the cost of state employees in these budgets. They range from a high of 78.5% of the real estate agency's budget is for salary and benefits, down to only 2.7% for housing and community services. You can't get much different than that. The state average 10.5% of costs are for personal services. For services and supply. Oh, I'm sorry.
Senator Johnson.
Let me just add, because I think it's useful to bring some real-world context to this so that you understand a little bit more about what we're talking about. And I keep looking at our new colleagues. I don't mean to disregard you guys. The debt service in ODOT is largely for a program called Connect Oregon. Yep. And your districts may have been beneficiaries of projects that were delivered through Connect Oregon. We have bounced all over in our commitment from $100 million down to $40 million. And then a kabuki theater-like process to dish those grants out. But that just gives you a little flavor of where that debt is. And there are other big debts, but I'm just picking that one as an example because we've used it repeatedly. And it'll be up for consideration again in this session. One of the things that will come up is the subsidy to the train. Passenger rail is a beloved opportunity for Oregon. Each one of those seats is heavily subsidized. And the only reason that I'm bringing it up is that if one is combing through these budgets looking for opportunities for real savings, what we're selling, customers aren't buying. Do we keep selling it? And the politics surrounding passenger rail are breathtakingly aggressive. So I just share that with you so you know what you're walking into. Everybody says, run government like a business. Well, I'm not sure that a business decision would say subsidize the train as heavily as the train is being subsidized. Go down to Eugene and try to tell Co-Chair Nathanson that that's not a good investment. That's just a little real-life example of what you're going to run into.
And Representative Bearden, how did you get to the Capitol this morning?
Actually, I drove this morning, but yesterday I... road and it was only 20 minutes late getting to me in the morning and a half hour late going home. But other than that, really comfy.
Yeah. One of many problems. If you don't have reliable service, you don't have much of a much. So it's something that we'll discuss, but just know Mr. Bender is doing an extremely professional job of walking through just the facts, ma'am, just the facts, and behind almost every line that he has shown us in 2 days of presentations, there is some backstory of politics and complication and history and tradition in this building that you will run into when we drop the gavel tomorrow on the Racing Commission.
All good. Well, Mr. Bender.
Services and supplies. On the statewide level, it's another 10%, but you can see OLCC, that's 75% of their budget. OBDD, it's only 1.6% of their budget. Special payments, these are payments to others outside of state government. This is the vast majority of the state government's overall budget, but you have agencies that spend even more of their money in special payments. So the Employment Department, which is providing unemployment insurance payments to individuals, or Oregon Business Development Department, which is funding projects and providing funding to both local governments and to businesses in the form of loans and grants. They have a huge amount of special payments. And you have some agencies, even including ODOT, that have essentially very few special payments at all. So there's a great variety here. Debt service, this is the thing that you really can't reduce. You'd love to be able to, but these are sunk costs. ODVA, 43% of their budget is debt service. Housing and Business Oregon also have, and ODOT also have very high levels. But I've noted, if you note at the bottom there, this is the all funds budget. When you're talking about the general fund lottery fund portion that the co-chairs are asking you to look into for reductions, debt service aren't those numbers, they're higher. Debt service is about 60% of housing and OBDD's general fund and lottery fund budgets. So 60% of it you can't cut. You have to limit the cuts to the remaining 40%. And for ODOT, it's 90%. So all that general fund and lottery fund, they are now number one in this for the subcommittee. But 90% of it's for debt service. It's only the 10% that you'll be able to look at. Capital outlay, here are the figures. They're pretty small for these agencies. But that's what I had. I'd be happy to answer any questions. But just to sort of show you that you have a variety of interesting agency budgets coming up, and they're quite different from each other, and they're going to have different sources of budget growth and different issues that you'll have to address for them.
Excellent. Questions? Yes, Representative Braden.
So for the experienced members of this committee, do you have tricks and techniques that you can tell us for keeping track of all of this?
We'd have to kill you right afterwards.
Well, Mr. Bender, I'm going to encourage any committee members who have additional questions to use yours, their point person,
Please
pursue that,
definitely.
Even though we've got a number of different budget analysts that will be working with us starting tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow Ms. Deister will be here as your analyst for the Oregon Racing Commission.
Senator Johnson.
I shouldn't have been so flip and disrespectful of a sincere question. The answer is probably no. It's in the doing. When I first came to Ways and Means and I was appointed as a freshman, it was much more shrouded in secrecy and very closely held information. I applaud the fact that we're doing this kind of presentation for new people. I applaud the fact that we have gotten more transparent. There are still, in my opinion, room for greater transparency in Ways and Means. Because at the end, it's not always all going to be made on just good budget decisions. Politics will be suffused into it. But you have a rare opportunity, serving on Ways and Means, to help shape the budget of the state. And this is going to be a very difficult year. I would encourage as many of you as possible that are able to attend Ways and Means on the road to do so. Some of those meetings in past dire budget times have been very, very difficult. I mean, people out in the hall crying, worrying about the loss of their programs. You'll grow a little more epidermis from your service here, but it's just in the doing it that you get a little bit more adroit. That's the honest answer.
Thank you.
And let me just say, in addition to that, that with the roadshow coming up very quickly, there are going to be hearings all around the state. If you are interested in participating in that, please let LFO staff know that, and they will make sure there's a place at the table for you and a nameplate to go with that. I would think we begin on Friday evening right here, and I don't know if this table is going to be big enough for everybody that may be interested in sitting in, but then we're going to be following up with trips to Portland.
Portland, 2 o'clock Saturday, I think.
That's correct.
Sylvania campus of PCC. If I could add one more thing, Mr.
Please.
Chair. The way that these road shows are set up, for those of you that have not done any of them, is that it is purely the reception of testimony. There's no give and take between the committee and the witnesses. The witnesses are generally allowed 2 or 3 minutes. It's been my experience that we can do about 70 people in 2 hours at a couple of minutes. Sometimes the chairs are more rigorous than others in cutting people off. It's very difficult to do, particularly with emotionally charged testimony. But there's no dialogue, it's just receipt of information. And it's at times very, very compelling opportunity to hear from Oregonians about what decisions we make in this building. At first, I didn't like the idea because it was a pain for the staff to go out, and having now done it as many times as we've done it, I think taking the decision makers to the place where Oregonians live and work is an extremely valuable exercise, and one worthy of your participation to the degree that you're able.
And this year in particular, doing it earlier than ever before.
Yeah.
So, indeed worthwhile. Mr. Bender, I want to thank you for these 2 days of orientation and overview, and I know people will take advantage of the opportunity to come and follow up if they have additional questions. I'm going to conclude the informational hearing. Colleagues, we're going to be back and start very quickly. What's our smallest budget?
Racing Commission.
The Racing Commission. We're going to start with the Racing Commission tomorrow and start working our way in. Take advantage of these opportunities to sit down with agency heads and with other advocates and learn more about those budgets and delve in with questions or concerns. Anything else for the good of the order before we conclude this orientation session? If not, I will go ahead and close this meeting.
Of course.
This meeting.